Hi, I'm Charles Wolfhard, the Hometown Alaska. You know, having children is a good thing, right? That's something we want as a society, people to continue to do. We want to continue the human species. But you get kind of some bad news when you have a kid in Anchorage. You find out that if you need childcare for an infant, it costs around $1,200 a month. Think about adding $1,200 a month to your budget. Would you be able to do it? I think a lot of us would have to think really twice and figure out how we'd manage that. It's like a mortgage or a luxury car. So there's a real crisis around childcare in Anchorage. It's not affordable. It's hard for people to find it. There's questions about how you know whether it's quality. And that's going to be our topic today on Hometown Alaska. We're going to welcome your questions and your comments. How are we going to solve this problem as a community? We know we need childcare as a basic part of life in a modern society, but we're really not succeeding in delivering it within the budget of parents. Well, I've got two guests in the studio to talk about this from different perspectives. Scott Hamill is with me. He's a board member of the Tenina Child Development Center. He's an engineering professor as well, and just had a new boy or girl.
A boy.
So just in the last week or so.
A week old.
So exciting. Yeah. So get your checkbook out.
That's right.
And you already had other children.
Two others, yeah.
Okay. And Stephanie Berglund is the CEO of Thread, which is the formerly known as Child Care Connection. It's an organization which advocates for child care in Anchorage and helps people find child care when they need it. Thanks for being here, Stephanie.
Thanks for having me.
There's a really interesting article in ADN, which I've put on our website at alaskapublic.org, about the broken Alaska child care market and the problem of price and availability, which is affecting so many parents. And as I was just saying to Stephanie, this is a problem that I was aware of when my kids were in child care, which is, you know, 20 to 10 years ago. And it's still a problem. And it's something we don't see. In fact, it's gotten worse, it seems to me. Would you agree, Stephanie? It's really reached a crisis level.
It has. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, really kind of a three-pronged system that we think about when we think of what makes a child care market work. And that is that there is affordable and accessible and quality early care and learning available. And unfortunately, you know, finding that perfect mix of all three of those is a challenge for many families.
Right. One of the people quoted in the article was Kristen Platt, who used to be the producer of this show and had kids, and that was a joyful thing. But she pointed out that she really can't justify working and paying for childcare. And if she had two kids in childcare, it would pretty much wipe out the salary completely. And I just wonder how we got to that point. I mean, how did it get so out of whack? Is it just because salaries have not been going up and keeping pace with the cost of childcare?
Well, the cost is really expensive and often prohibitive, as you said. But, you know, that's really a dilemma because the true cost of providing quality childcare as a program and as a business is also very steep. So we know that the cost of Alaska living is high. And so that often drives the cost of running a quality program. So even just for shipping of basic supplies and materials, but also we know paying, you know, high quality teachers and having facility. We know that rent and housing is very expensive. So those are some of the driving factors that drive that cost.
Yeah.
And unfortunately for then on the family side, that that makes the market really right now as high as the market can bear. Like you said, you know, the cost of infant care in Anchorage right now is, you know, on average, well over $1,000. And that makes it often, like I said, unattainable for many families and for others, you know, a really a larger than we would like to see part of their budget.
Yeah. And I want to get more into that because that pushes people into options that they would probably really prefer not to use. And I remember being in that position of when you just simply couldn't find a babysitter and you had to go to work.
Yep.
Sometimes you end up leaving your kids somewhere where you'd rather not, and that's a big problem. Mm-hmm. But before we get to that, Scott, you are a board member of Tenina Child Development Center, which has had this issue with finding a space.
A home.
Yeah, but before we get into sort of all those details, you're also a numbers guy. Do you understand or can you explain why it is that a business that pays its workers pretty low wages is pricing getting priced out of the market in terms of its customers. Why is that happening?
I've thought about this a lot, and I think it just has to do with it just comes down to the basic numbers. You know, you take what you one of the things is that Anchorage in particular has very stringent requirements on what you need to have a group center. They're very, very high, you know, certain amount of square footage. There's a certain number of bathrooms, you know, all these things, which is good, right? Because it helps with the quality and the safety of the kids. But you have to meet all those requirements. And so that there's a cost there. And then you need a certain number of workers with a certain number of kids. And then, you know, a lot of the centers are open for a long time because people are working long hours. And, you know, Tenina, for example, is I believe, 11 hours. And so you got to staff 11 hours, 5 days a week, you know. And so you add that all up and you figure out the number of dollars per hour. It's actually pretty low, you know, compared to like what you might pay a babysitter. You know, it's $2-3 an hour for care. But the number of hours in a month is a lot, you know, and so your monthly numbers get high. And so there's no sort of silver bullet reason why these things are so expensive. It's just the number of providers. There's a ratio of the number of providers for the number of kids.
And we want all those things, right?
Yeah, those are all good things,
those
right?
Those laws pass for a good reason.
Yeah. But that's just how it stacks up. You know, you got to heat the place, and that's expensive here. You got to rent the place. And then, again, you don't want to be paying workers $7 an hour to watch your kids.
Right. You'd rather have them be well-qualified, of course.
Right.
So there you have it, folks. We're talking about childcare in Anchorage, and we welcome your comments or questions. I bet there are a lot of listeners who are struggling with this issue right now or have struggled with it in the past or have grandkids who are dealing with it. So give us a call. The phone number here in the studio is 550-8433. 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752. And the email address is hometown@alaskapublic.org. And we sort of welcome any questions or comments on our topic to keep the conversation of interest to you. Scott, the Tenina Child Development Center was located at UAA until suddenly it wasn't. And so what happened there, and where are you now?
So in January of last year, January 2015, we received a letter from the chancellor's office that basically said that we were no longer welcome in our space, and we had 90 days to get out of our space. So we spent most of that 90 days looking for
and just so listeners know, this is a large childcare center.
It's 60 kids.
Yeah, so a considerable amount of space. It's
right.
Not an easy
yep.
thing to find. Yeah,
And it's hard to find a space. As I said, there's a lot of regulations. You have to have a playground. It has to be adjacent, and certain number of toilets per kid, and they have to be small. And so it's very difficult to find a space. And we were very, very fortunate to find a space at St. Mary's Episcopal Church. And they actually have their own childcare center on site. And so, but they had just barely enough space for us to kind of move in adjacent. So we actually have two childcare centers in the same mm-hmm. building.
I know it well.
And so we moved there in May of 2015, and we've been there since then. And that was not an easy task. There was a lot of parent volunteer hours. We had to move some walls. We had to add some storage outside. We had to add cabinetry and shelving, and it was quite an event. So that's where we are now.
But that was temporary.
That was temporary.
Trying to get a permanent space.
Mm-hmm. And so we then our head stopped spinning. We set about the task of trying to find a permanent space. And we were approached by Alaska Regional Hospital, who offered us, currently it's 9,000 square feet, which is about three times the size of the space we had at UAA. And the space for free of rent.
Great.
For 10 years. And the only catch is that the space is not built as a childcare center. And so our task since then has been to raise enough money to construct a child development center that is, you know, a high quality center with
Which is a high level in the building code and everything else.
Yeah, it has to meet all of the requirements, and it also has to be built in a hospital, which the construction. Anytime you build anything in a hospital, unfortunately, it's very expensive.
Yeah, so. And what is Alaska Regional asking for in return?
They have we're basically providing them with what we call first right of refusal for 50% of the spots. So the employees at Alaska Regional, you know, get first dibs on 50% of the spots, and we're going to expand so that amount of square footage allows us to go from about 60 to about 100.
Great.
90, 95. And then a little down the road, they've asked us to add an infant program.
Uh-huh.
Because currently we only serve toddlers, which is 18 months up to kindergarten.
Well, that's kind of a good news story so far. We want to hear more about it. But first, we have a caller. Another Stephanie is calling from Anchorage. Stephanie?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, I had, when my family decided to have a third child, and we looked at our budget, like you said, you know, $1,200 for infant care, it's like adding another mortgage. My family actually decided that my husband would go back to school full time and we would take advantage of child care assistance. Unfortunately, I received a raise at work recently and now we no longer qualify. You know, I'm sure that's something a lot of families face in Anchorage, and I kind of wanted to get the input of the thread director that you have there today.
So in other words, you got bumped up above the threshold required for you to receive the child care assistance that comes from the state of Alaska, and so therefore your child care costs went way up and your raise ended up being a bad news story.
Pretty much. I almost declined it until I realized I wasn't allowed to.
I see. Yeah. Stephanie?
Yes. Thank you for calling in, Stephanie. Unfortunately, that's a story that we hear far too often, you know, that families really have a dilemma when they're, you know, maybe offered a promotion or looking for a job change that will help support their family more, but then puts their child care assistance in jeopardy. So, you know, currently in child care, just to put this in a little bit of context, you know, there are about slots for 18,000 children, but less than 4,000 of them are being served on child care assistance. And part of that.
What do you mean, slots?
So that's capacity. So spaces in child care across the state. So there are
of
licensed and regulated spaces. So and that if you add you know, Head Start and some pre-K classrooms that are offered throughout the state, that's you know, in total it's about 24,000 children who are able to be served in kind of a licensed or what we call a regulated slot. But unfortunately, you know, the child care assistance resources and program is right now, you know, only accessible for less than 4,000 of them. So that makes it really a burden, you know, for private pay parents really to shoulder those costs. And part of the issue with child care assistance right now is that our rates and the family kind of eligibility formula is based on our income demographics and our child care pricing from 2009. So that was last adjusted in 2010, and that's making it significantly outdated. So that's one of the areas that the state of Alaska, the Child Care Programs Office, and Child Care Assistance Programming is looking to change. And together, you know, THRED and other early childhood partners are advocating for that to be more current and, you know, keeping with inflation so that families aren't, you know, priced out of that market, but continue to be eligible as they make, you know, small increases in their salary.
Interesting.
My understanding is it's a sliding scale. Is that correct?
Yes. And so it's a mixed formula depending on the region you're in and the state, okay. The type of care your child is in, the age of your child, and then, of course, you know, your eligibility of your income and qualifying activity. So it's a formula that's different for families across the state.
So, Stephanie, did I understand you to say that when you had your third child, it was economically advantageous for your husband to stop working and go back to school because you would be eligible, and so essentially his salary would have been essentially defeated by your child care costs if you hadn't done that? Is that sort of your calculation?
That's
right.
Correct. Yeah, when we sat down and did a budget, we determined his entire salary would basically go to childcare. I mean, we'd be paying, you know, over $2,500 a month, mm-hmm. you know, just in childcare. So he went back to school full time and is almost finished. So we just have to figure out how to budget the next couple of years while he finishes up. Because now that he's in school, there's no reason to pull him out.
That's a lot of money. Well, thanks, Stephanie. That was a good comment. It makes it very, very real what we're talking about, which is quality and affordable child care in Anchorage, which has reached a crisis point. It's Charles Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth, and I've got two guests in the studio, Scott Hemmel, who is a board member of Tenina Child Development Center, and Stephanie Berglund, who's CEO of THRED, a child care advocacy organization. And we welcome your calls and comments, questions, or your experiences. The phone number here is 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, the number is 888-353-5752, and the email address is hometown@alaskapublic.org. And you can always find those phone numbers on our website at alaskapublic.org, where we post a page for each show. Scott, I think you were going to say something.
Yeah, so one thing about that is that given that Tenina used to be at UAA, we used to actually see that scenario a lot. We would see students who were trying to, and so one of the things about the child care assistance is, that's important to understand is that it doesn't just cover your costs. There's a state max, and that state max didn't even cover the tuition or the fees at Tenina, which was kind of low, you know, because we had free space and we're sort of geared towards helping students. And so, so the parents were responsible for making up the difference. And it would usually be in the neighborhood of anywhere from $200 to $500 a month, which for a student can be a lot of money.
Right.
So that's a very familiar thing. As we transition away from UAA, that we will probably see that less. But of course the students don't go away, and now there's no child care center there who is directly, you know, catering towards those students.
Right. Well, I mean, from a social standpoint, we want people to get more training and to advance their education, because that's good for all of us. That helps our economy and creates a more educated workforce. But if they can't get child care and afford it, then they have to stay in the jobs that they're in, and then we get to pay for their child care. So it hits the society both ways, isn't it? So, Stephanie, one of the things that is an ongoing problem is that the quality child care centers like Tenina often have long waiting lists, and you just simply can't get into them when you need the child care. And so then as a parent, you end up kind of moving down the list, where hopefully you don't just end up with the somebody down the street who may or may not be offering quality babysitting. Maybe they're a good person, but you kind of don't know. Tell us about how you provide your service at THRED to help folks find childcare.
Well, we know that it's a really big decision and an emotional one for families. And so THRED is here to help and be a resource for families. We have a free service for any family who is looking for and shopping for childcare. And we have what's called free childcare referrals. And those are available online on our website. You can find a link on our homepage. And you can also call or walk in to any of our offices across the state. That service is really great. It helps families take the guesswork out of how to look for childcare. I think people often don't realize, maybe until they're pregnant or even after their child is born, that this is something kind of a whole new system they need to navigate and learn about. So many people, you know, spend time word of mouth, but we have this service that is not based on, you know, recommending childcare, but really offering some referrals that can get families started. And what makes us unique is also helping families understand those key quality indicators of what quality looks
like.
This
is what I was going to ask, because that's the sort of very intimidating thing when you're looking for child care. Is my kid going to be safe here? Is this the right place?
Yes.
If it's a preschool, is it going to be real preschool? Are they really going to? This is just a funny example, but I do remember going to a child care center where they said, oh, well, we've got a great thing. We're doing a unit on Arctic animals, the animals of Alaska. And went in, there was the polar bear and the caribou and the penguin. And I thought, okay, well, maybe it's not that high a quality then. But so how do you determine quality?
Yeah, I mean, that's the magic question, right? You know, we really focus on four key elements. You know, we encourage families to look for early care and learning that is licensed, that is healthy, safe, and playful. And so many people ask for a learning environment or, as you said, kind of a pre-K environment. And I think it's helpful for families to understand that, you know, all of those words are really the same now, if it's a pre-K or early learning center or child development center. I mean, we know from birth that children are learning wherever they are. You know, they're learning at home with you as their parents, and they're learning in our community, and they're learning in their early care and learning program. So we want families to know that that's happening in any environment. And so to ensure that they're, you know, learning through play, you know, that there's lots of time for lots of different activity, you know, gross motor and fine motor activity, that there's some social emotional focus in a program, that they have time for nutritious meals, and they have time for lots of physical play and activity. I mean, children are learning through play. They're learning through, you know, interactions with their peers and having a good time. So we want families to focus on that. We want the environment to be.
Parent, how do you know those things, though?
Yeah. Well, you know, we encourage families to look around. You know, when we provide families referrals, you know, one of our top recommendations is for families to make appointments, you know, to go and interview these programs. So we support family choice 100%. You know, we get asked all the time, just tell me which is the best one. And that's really up for the families to determine that. You know, we don't determine that. So we encourage families to go and meet and tour these programs. And it's important for them to make that right fit. And they'll know through interactions with the program's directors, you know, learn who would be your child's teacher, you know, ask about their credentials and their training, mm-hmm. you know, ask about the schedule for the day. I mean, families know their child best, so they're going to know their temperament, you know, what would work in terms of the type of environment they're in, right. How big the group size is. So we encourage families. We have tools and resources, you know,
to help that, you know what to look for. Yeah.
So, but
in terms of like safety, there are inspectors who go out and look at the larger child care centers, and they check to make sure that they're safe. But there's centers or daycare babysitting that's under a certain size. There's no inspection. So where does that cutoff take place?
Correct. So in the state of Alaska, you can legally have a business license and care for children if you're caring for less than four children in your home. So we know that is of course happening, and some families make that choice for their family, whether for whatever reason, if it's somebody that they know, or maybe find that a little bit more economical. But you know, that quality, like you were saying, you know, maybe something that works for the family, but I think the underlying factor is it's really unknown since it's not regulated. And oftentimes we hear from families when they make a informal care arrangement, which we kind of call family, friend, or neighbor care. Oftentimes we find that has less continuity of care, and it's changing more frequently for families, which of course disrupts, you know, a family's maybe work schedule. But it's more importantly, you know, it supports that continuity and support for that young child.
Mm-hmm. So Tenina is a sort of a full-on large center, and so you go through all those inspections, and you try to provide a quality sort of program. How do you, as a board member, get confidence that you're giving a quality program? What are your sort of indicators you look for?
Well, that's a really good question. One of the things that's interesting about the sort of year-long journey that we've been on is that there have been a number of times where we've sort of thought we were going to close. More times than I would like to admit. And as a result of that, my wife and I, our family has actually toured, I think, every place in town. Because at any one of the problems, as we've sort of stated earlier, is the waiting lists. You know, you have to be on all these different waiting lists, because it's not like you can just drop in. And so we've toured a lot of places, and, you know, I think the fit is a really important thing, you know, because we've toured some places and we know our kids, and we think, well, this is a great place, but it's just not the right environment for our kids. But, you know, you can kind of tell. I feel like when you go in, you get a sense of the security. You know, are there, you know, is it in a neighborhood where there people might be walking by? Are there locks on the doors? You know, various childcare centers have different, you know, key code access or different ways of getting in the building. One of the things for that was important for us, you know, we went to one center and did they ID you if they didn't know who you were when you went to pick up your kid? Because this happened one time at another center before we were at Tenina. You know, I hadn't met the providers yet, but I showed up and they said, okay, here you go. Here's your kid, you know, and I'm like, you don't have any idea who I am. Like, I've never met you before. And that happened once at Tenina, and they said, well, I'm going to need to see some identification, you know, because so there's the security aspect. The social emotional thing, you know, there's various philosophies. You know, people talk about Montessori. There's a couple of other ones. And, you know, when you talk to child development center, high quality type people, they'll give you a list. You know, they'll say, oh, I'm more into this. And because they have bachelor's degrees or master's degrees in early childhood education. And they'll tell you at the end of the day that it's not super important what the actual philosophy is. It's just that you have a philosophy, you have some education, you understand kind of the child's social emotional learning.
Having providers who are staff members who have an associate's degree at least
and have some training
is really important, and there are some accreditation standards that relate to that, right? And is that, I don't know if Tenina has accreditation.
There is an accreditation. We're not accredited at the moment. The biggest we were accredited, but they changed the standards, and the space that we had at UAA didn't meet those standards. It was old and grandfathered and to a lot of things. So we hope once we're established at Alaska Regional that we will be accredited again. There are very, very few accredited programs in town. There are a lot of good programs that are not accredited. So that's really not necessarily, it costs money to get accredited.
Right.
You know, obviously if you are accredited, the ratios are, that's another thing to look for is ratios. You know, we have...
How many students per provider. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's a limit on that, but a good program.
Nice to be better than the limit.
Usually be better. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it's Hometown Alaska. We're talking about child care today. And, we're going to be talking more in the second half about Tenina in particular. They're trying to move into this new space and they're trying to raise some money. So we'll give Scott a chance to talk about that. We're also going to talk about solutions to this problem. How we can improve as a community in taking care of our kiddos. That's got to be one of the most basic measures of a community is how well you take care of your children, right? And why it is that Alaska has some of the lowest levels of state-funded pre-K of any state in the country. And I'll also be giving out the phone numbers and email for you to get on the air with your questions or concerns about childcare. So stick with us as Hometown Alaska continues.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Hometown Alaska on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth, and we're talking about the child care crisis in Anchorage. Lack of child care centers, places to take your kids, prices that most people, frankly, can't afford, that will wipe out your salary and make staying home with your kid more profitable than going to work, and the issues of quality, making sure that the places we take our children are good places where they're going to grow and be healthy. Two guests in the studio today. Scott Hamill is a board member of the Tenina Child Development Center, which is in the process of moving into new space and raising money for that space and expanding, which is really good news for people looking for childcare. Thanks for being with us, Scott.
You're welcome.
And Stephanie Berglund is the CEO of THRED, Child Care Advocacy Organization in Anchorage, which also has a service that helps parents find childcare, which is a really helpful thing. And you can find that through our website at alaskapublic.org by clicking on today's show. And we welcome your questions and comments. We'd really like to hear them, in fact, about the problems you're facing in finding childcare. Maybe you've got some advice for other parents who are looking, or maybe you just like to ask some questions about childcare of our expert guests. The phone number here is 550-8433, 550-8433. If you're outside Anchorage, the number is 888-353-5752. And our email address is hometown@alaskapublic.org. So, Scott, the Tenina Child Development Center is moving into new space at Alaska Regional Hospital, and you're sounds like doing a major remodel and increasing your capacity. Mm-hmm. And that's obviously very expensive to remodel that space. Tell us about your fundraising efforts and what you still need.
So the total remodel is we're still kind of kicking around numbers. The architects are working on the plans and things like that, so we don't have an exact number, but we estimate that it'll be somewhere in the neighborhood of about $800,000 to build out the space, which is, you know, when you're a board of you know, 11 volunteer parents sort of sitting around a table, $800,000 is a pretty daunting number.
Yeah.
But so far, the bulk of obviously the donation the in-kind donation of space from Alaska Regional is a huge asset. And it's worth about $2 million over the 10 years of the lease that we have. So that's a benefit. And then the second sort of large portion is that we're taking out a loan for the bulk of it. It'll probably end up being in the neighborhood of about a $600,000, $500,000 loan, which will come into a reasonably hefty monthly payment, which we'll have to make. So. And then in terms of the fundraising, you know, one of the things about a commercial loan is that you have to have a down payment. And so, but given that we were evicted with very little notice, we have not really had any chance to get our bearings or create any savings or anything like that. So, so we appealed to the community, and our base of parents and grandparents and friends. And so to date we raised, about $50,000 from small donors, and then about $250,000 was committed from the Rasmussen Foundation, which really made it happen. You know, we're pretty much ready to close the doors, and then we also had a generous contribution from Dr. Bradley Cruz, and he was creating a match, or created a match. So anybody from Alaska Regional Hospital, UAA, or the blood bank is eligible for the match.
And so you're still raising money.
Yeah, we're still looking for about another $10,000.
Okay, well you've made a lot of progress.
We have, yeah.
Well, I mean, this kind of points up why there aren't more childcare centers, right? Because if mm-hmm. it costs that kind of money, mm-hmm. it's unreasonable, really. I mean, you're not going to make it as a profit making business, and not many nonprofits can just go out and raise that kind of mm-hmm. money, and you're getting $2 million free. That's mm-hmm. where you're starting
right,
from.
Right. Yeah, and we are really lucky that we had a base of support from you know, sort of good and bad. We had a base of support from because we're an existing center. We have an existing license, which is really hard to get because you have to have, you know, the pages and pages and pages of regulations to get a license, and we already have a license, and so. The situation for us could not be any more in our favor.
And you almost didn't make it.
Yeah, I don't understand how anyone could sort of do this from scratch. And when Tenina was started in 1979, obviously things were very different.
Yeah.
It's very, very daunting for anybody trying to start something.
I guess that's part of the problem. Well, let's go to Keaton, who's calling from Anchorage. Keaton?
Hi,
Keaton, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, go right ahead with your question or your comment.
Mostly just a comment. I'm just kind of bummed out about this whole child care education, early education system up here. It seems impossible to get in anywhere with waiting lists and lotteries and the cost of everything as well. So I basically took it upon myself to be the primary early educator for my 4-year-old girl. And had a little bit of help from my dad, so I've got like a whiteboard set up on my wall, and we're just doing basic stuff, like basic math, basic addition, days of the week, spelling, reading books. I mean, I think parents that are able to could take a little more initiative in helping their kids that way.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I did that myself as I have 4 kids, and I never had any of them 100% in daycare or childcare, as I'm supposed to call it now. But I also felt like I wanted my kids to be around other kids, right? I didn't want them to be home with me and nobody else all the time. And you can organize play dates, but I really liked, the St. Mary's Play School was a great thing. It was only a few hours a day, but at least they got to be around other kids. Does that concern you at all, Keaton?
Yeah, definitely. For a while, we had her enrolled in a music school thing down on Huffman. I can't remember what happened with that, but we were looking at getting her into a soccer this summer, but we just found out that the soccer program didn't have enough kids to sign up for it, so they're refunding us our money. But now we're looking at some other kind of socialization type of thing, maybe like Boys and Girls Club, or I don't know, we're just kind of looking around to find, maybe you guys have some advice on that.
We'll throw that out to the guests. Stephanie, you got thoughts on if you are going to be a stay-at-home parent, which is to me like super rewarding. It's a kind of a luxury if you're able to afford it and do it. But you do need a break now and then, and also often you want your kids to be doing some outside activity.
Yes. So, we strongly encourage families in whatever choice that they make, and it's great that you have the opportunity and options to be home with your daughter. Through our online childcare referrals, or if you call Thread for more information, you know, we do have referrals for part day and some drop-in childcare options. So if that's of interest to you, especially many of the faith-based programs, you know, offer I would say what people think of traditional preschool for a few hours a day, preschool programs, but there's other options that are available on a part-time basis.
Yeah. All right. Thanks very much for the call, Keaton.
Yep, thanks.
I'm interested in, Stephanie, in your response to this. My perception is that Alaska, though we've come out of this period of great wealth, we don't seem to have really dealt with our early childhood issues. And as I mentioned, we are, I think, third to the lowest or maybe the lowest in state-funded pre-K, which is sort of four-year-old pre-K, which is... You know, if it's quality, it's sort of with certificated teachers who are trained in a school building. Do you feel like that's true across the board with our early childhood, that Alaska is really, for whatever reason, has fallen far behind other places?
I think it has. You know, we, for many reasons, I think for Alaska being, you know, still a younger state, and for the field of early care and learning still being, you know, relatively a young sector and really just dramatically changing in one generation, I think Alaska is, you know, falling behind and trying to keep pace with that. You know, many states are leading and making huge investments in early care and learning, I think, and there's large momentum on a federal level with coming from the President Obama's support, you know, to really look at this in a different way. That's because our, you know, families, our economies are changing. You know, many families now have all of the adults in their household working and are in need of community-based care. So that shift is happening and is continuing to grow. And you know, unfortunately, our legislature, and I think harder now with our state budget issues, you know, has yet to really make a commitment to this issue and help support our youngest Alaskans.
Mm-hmm. It's sometimes been thought of as a liberal conservative thing, but I recently read about the state of Oklahoma, which is, if anything, even more conservative state than Alaska, and they've got one of the best pre-K programs anywhere, right? They've got, like, virtually every kid is in state-funded
Oklahoma pre-K. Was one of the very first states to implement universal pre-K for all of their four-year-olds across the state, you know, in alignment with their, you know, K-12 education systems. And you're exactly right. It was led during a time of a Republican governor who said, you know, this is our responsibility and economic imperative that will ultimately help our economy and the success of our citizens in the long run.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're talking about child care here on Hometown Alaska today, and we welcome your calls and comments and your experience. How are you solving this problem? Are you staying home with the kids, or have you found an auntie down the street who can take care of it? It seems like everybody has to work through this on their own. Phone number here is 550-8433, 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752, and the email address is hometown@alaskapublic.org. So, Scott, you've just had your third child.
That's right.
And I know university professors are don't necessarily get rich in their jobs. Is it a financial burden for your family to deal with this?
Yeah. I mean, my personal, it's funny that you mentioned, you know, I currently have two daughters in preschool. And it is actually, it's more than my mortgage by a fair amount. So I would consider that to be significant.
Yeah.
But for the third, actually my wife who is an engineer, and with a master's degree, has decided to stay home for a while for the third one. Then the oldest is actually going to kindergarten, so the burden will be lessened a little bit. But that's a decision, you know, and, you know, myself being a professor of engineering, I'm pretty in tune with the engineering community, and it's not a good thing to be losing, you know, registered engineers with a master's degree in the city. I mean, there's a great need for that. People are hiring all the time. And, you know, the students I graduate get jobs really quick. So that's, you know, our story, but I think it's telling of, we don't have any family to lean on here. You know,
is that more of a personal choice on her part that she wants to be with the kids, or is it an economic choice?
It's both, you know. We're very fortunate that we're sort of at the level where we can choose. If she wanted to work, to continue working, then we could probably make it work. But the other way works as well. So we're lucky that we're not really forced one way or the other. But it's certainly a factor.
Yeah.
You know, it's very, especially infant care. You know, infant care. And I love this. Somewhere on, I think it's on Thread's website somewhere, there's a statistic about brain growth versus public education dollars, you know, and the brain, you know, having a week old is, you can see in days how fast, you know, the baby develops. And brain growth is huge in the first 3 to 4 years. It's, I don't remember the statistics, it's 75% of brain growth or something, neural pathways happens in the first 3 years or some obscene number. And yet there is $0 of public funding until you get to be five.
Right.
Right. And so that it's kind of staggering when you think about it that
right.
way.
And it was striking me as we were talking about just from the point of view of economics, I mean, put aside all the sort of the family and human parts of this, does it make economic sense for engineers and highly trained people who to be staying home with kids as opposed to having the kids taken to a center where somebody can take care of numerous kids and then who's trained to do so. And then the highly trained people are in their jobs. But for whatever reason, it doesn't seem to be working, which I'm still find astonishing. But let's go to Julia, who is calling from Anchorage. Julia?
Yes, hi.
Yeah. Did you have a comment or question?
Yeah, just a couple of things. So I'm a teacher, and when I worked in Oregon, the high school I worked at actually had a daycare program in the high school. It was a class that students could take, and then teachers could actually put their children there in the program. And I always thought that that was such an amazing thing, and I believe they have something at King Career Center.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I was just wondering, is that really limited because of the size of space you guys would need to do a program? Or, I don't know, it just seems like teachers have such a interesting situation because they work different hours than most people, and then they have the summer off. But then if you want to do childcare, you have to pay for the entire summer to keep your spot.
Yeah, good point. Stephanie?
Yeah, I think that's a great example, and it also, you know, highlights an interesting dilemma that we have here in Alaska. And I think not only for teachers, but it, you know, we have our slope workers, you know, working kind of variable schedules, and then often seasonal workers, especially in areas in the southeast region of the state. So, you know, that's where we really have, I think, the greatest opportunity in Alaska to think differently about how we're, you know, coming together and partnering to offer more creative early care and learning solutions. And I think, you know, Scott and the Tenaya and Alaska Regional Partnership is really a beautiful example of that. And you're exactly right. You know, many other states are making investments in existing infrastructure, you know, in some of their government buildings, you know, and even using their existing school buildings, you know, for full day and full year, you know, community-based care that similar to what Tenaya is doing is, you know, then offering maybe a first-come, first-serve, you know, access to that partner, but then also, you know, strengthening what's available in the community. You know, other states and local communities are investing in multi-generational programs and, you know, matching senior care centers with early childhood programs, which is also a beautiful partnership. So, and we're seeing more businesses make this investment. You know, there are several business-sponsored childcare programs, and there's some here and in our state, but we're hoping to see more of those.
Yeah. Well, that's a really good...
thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's a good point, Julia. And,
yeah.
And I think that a lot of teachers are probably have to deal with that. And the idea of paying $1,000 a month through the summer for something you don't really need is pretty daunting.
Yeah.
And up until recently, actually, Tenaya allowed everybody to take the summer off, which, because we're associated with the university. And that was staggering to other people, you know, like, wait, you can just take the summer off and
right.
hold your spot. And
that's
how
great.
Does that even work? But, you know, as a board, we had to stop doing that because
you can't lay off your workers for the summer.
And, yeah. And we just couldn't make the numbers work anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with, you know, obviously once we moved to St. Mary's, you know, and we lost our tie to the university, it was really, really difficult to do that. But, And you know, board members kept bringing up the fact that, like, nobody else does this in town.
Right.
You know, like, you know, everywhere else you have to pay to hold your spot.
Yeah.
So that's definitely a dilemma. We have a number of parents that are teachers, and it's a difficult position to put them in.
It's Hometown Alaska. We have about 10 minutes left, and we welcome any more folks who want to get on the show and talk about childcare with us. Phone number is 550-8433. Outside Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752, and the email address is hometown@alaskapublic.org. I'd like to talk a little bit more about solutions in this final portion. I think we've established that the economics of childcare without subsidies simply do not work, that you can't make money at it, so therefore it needs to be a nonprofit, and it probably needs to be a nonprofit like the situation Tenaya has, where they have free space, although they're having to invest heavily in remodeling the space. Stephanie, is this something, I mean, we're now in a world where we can't really turn to our state government to fix things. Is it time for businesses and community groups to step forward and say, hey, I'll give you the space if you do a center the way Alaska Regional is doing?
Yes. You know, we're really excited about some of the models that are happening around the country, and that we can, you know, look to other countries at, you know, the successes that they've had around these solutions. And more, you know, businesses are looking for ways to attract and retain, you know, their workforce. You know, we have been working with some of the local economic groups to recognize that, you know, in this modern world, you know, people, millennials and other, you know, working families are really choosing the place that they want to live based on the place and not necessarily a job, because we can all work, you know, often remotely and or find jobs when we get there. So if we want to build a quality of life, you know, much as we're all looking to address our issues of, you know, transportation and housing and other infrastructure, you know, it's important for us to include our childcare infrastructure as part of that conversation.
Mm-hmm. So if you're a business person, if you have space, you could, you know, invite a nonprofit to come in and set up a childcare center in that space, and your employees would pay for the childcare, but they'd get a huge benefit in that their kid would be in the building with them.
Yes. Yes, yeah. It's a huge benefit. And, you know, it's wonderful to talk with employees who have that benefit, you know, to, you know, maybe visit the child care program and enjoy lunch with their child, or for, you know, nursing moms, you know, to be able to have easy, quick access to their children during the day. It's even the employees who don't have children, you know, get to look out their windows and see children laughing and playing outside during the day. So it's really, you know, a wonderful part of building that community of a happy workplace for any business.
Yeah, you know, I used to walk by.
You probably miss having that.
I do, and especially with in engineering, you know, before the we just finished a new building, but before that, I was teaching all over campus because we didn't have any classrooms. And so I would walk by a couple times a day and just kind of stand there and look at the kids playing. And actually, when we left, I got a lot of comments from coworkers who don't have any kids, but that just that there's that sound, that there's just silence, because for 30 years, there's this screaming, essentially,
of laughing
and children on the playground at, you know, all temperatures and all, you know, they go outside all the time. So, and I'm excited because Alaska Regional doesn't really know what it's gotten itself into yet.
That's right,
And they will get to experience that, and it will become a part of their campus, and they'll sort of miss it if it were to go away.
Well, that's so, the thing is, it's actually having that is energizing and good for all ages, especially elders, I would say, having kids around. Mm-hmm. I at one time, Tanania provided an opportunity for early childhood development education at UAA, and it was sort of a beautiful, you know, symbiosis, and I don't understand why that went away.
Well, so we actually maintained a great support from the College of Education, which is you know, a subset of the university. It was the university's policy, but the college has been very supportive, and we actually maintain a board member from the College of Education, and so we maintain that alliance. Even as we go to Alaska Regional, you know, geographically they're a mile apart or something. Mm-hmm. And I've talked a lot to, the faculty in the College of Education in the early childhood, program, and they, you know, they really liked Tanina because they said it was one of the only places in town they could send their students who, and they could really try anything they wanted. You know, there was no, a lot of the other centers have sort of a rote curriculum. Some of them have management companies that run them that are national or international. And they have this, here's your curriculum, you know. And so at Tanina, they were sort of able to just, they said, you know, can we try this? And actually there was a couple of research papers that were written by some of the College of Education faculty on things that they tried at Tanina. And so that's not going to go away. They're still going to, you know, the college places students all over town, but that doesn't necessarily mean they get to do whatever they want when they're present. So,
right.
And we actually just hired a number of recent graduates, so which we're excited about. Yeah.
So Stephanie, who is actually providing most of the childcare? Is it nonprofits and churches, or are there profit making organizations doing it? How is this happening now?
There are a mix, you know, like Scott said, most of them are nonprofit, but there is really a 50-50 split in our state of half of the programs are centers, which means they're caring for over 30 children. So they're of varying sizes, you know, kind of small or large centers in community-based settings. And then there's also half of our licensed programs are licensed family child care homes. So that's a business typically, you know, in a person's home that is licensed and dedicated for child care services.
Which is sort of a lower level of licensing, so fewer requirements?
Well, they have actually, you know, a similar set of regulations.
Okay.
And, you know, for safety and fire and background checks. It's just different because it's a different home and it's a different environment.
Right. I just kind of recall it when I was involved with the Hillcrest Child Care Center. There were all these issues, like we had to have multiple sinks and you had to go through this huge health care, which would be very difficult to do in a home setting, I would think.
Yes, but there's still similar requirements, you know, so related to sinks, it would be about your water temperature, you know, you know, it's similar, I think, but just adapted for the environment.
I see. Mm-hmm. So one of those centers with 10 or home child care.
They
settings.
Can have a maximum of 8, and then group homes outside of the municipality can serve up to 12 children.
Okay. So if it was 8, it would just be one person who was running their
Correct.
Own business.
Mm-hmm. And typically.
So do you have a sense of how many people are in the two different types of settings? How many
kids?
Yes,
it's about, well, more are served in centers, you know, just because they have more capacity. But the number of facilities is really split. We are seeing more interest from families for center-based care, and we are seeing fewer family child care businesses across the state. And I think that's largely, you know, having to do with many of them are baby boomer age and looking to retire and went into, you know, again, you know, a generation ago, went into this business to, you know, stay home with their own children and then take care of a few others and then have turned that into a child care business over time. So that's, we're seeing, you know, some people talk about a little bit more of a challenge with that because of space in their home. And that has to do with just some of the other, you know, housing issues that we're having.
Is that adding to the shortage as people are leaving?
It is adding to the shortage. You know, it's hard. It's seemingly harder to find facility space for centers. Like Scott said, there's requirements for, you know, parking spaces and a playground area. So, you know, we're trying to be creative with that and look for partnership opportunities. But we're also working with the municipality and others to consider, you know, this is engineering related, I guess, in new building codes. And for those who are looking for new building, you know, considering options for building and child care.
Sounds like there's a lot of room for volunteers and for folks who will be leaders to think about starting nonprofit child care centers, churches who may have Sunday school space that's not used during the week, businesses that would like to offer that to their to their employees, you know, at a low cost. A lot of opportunity to fix a really serious problem.
Yeah.
Well, I thank both of you for being here. Stephanie
thank
Berglund,
you.
CEO of Thread, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And Scott Hamill, a board member at Tenina Child Development Center. Good luck with getting your last $10,000 and moving your center. That's fantastic news that you're still around. Our producer on Hometown Alaska is Dave Waldron. Chief Content Officer for Alaska Public Media is Pat Yak. We're going to be taking a hiatus through July and August. Kathleen McCoy will be with you until then. I'm Charles Wolforth, and thanks for being with us.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Learn more about Hometown Alaska and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.